lines because they're pictures, images, stories of your kingdom. Lord, as we look at this parable today, help us to know more your kingdom and to know more the king of that kingdom, that we would fall more in love with you and give you the worship you deserve. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, I apologize for last week. We were struggling with a lot of technical difficulties and I felt distracted. So my hope and prayer is that I'm able to be present with you guys instead of trying to be present with my technology. So let's go for this, all right? Several years ago, my family and I stopped off at a Burger King to grab lunch with what felt like half the state. The lines were just so long. But finally, we get through the line and we place the order for our food. We grab a table, we go back and get our food. We finally sit down and we're able to enjoy our Burger King meals. Except Zoe. Poor Zoe. She had put her straw in her drink and pulled out her fries and she was unwrapping her burger. And then she noticed that something was missing. It was literally, the picture is just so good, guys. It's worth it. There we go. It's not of her. Don't worry. Are we going to do this? There we go. Okay. There you go. Right? It was literally two toasted buns with nothing in it. There was no beef. There was no cheese. There was no tomato. There was no lettuce. There's not even mayonnaise or ketchup. Now, for those of you who are on the younger end, you're going to have to bear with me as I reference a childhood memory. For those of you who remember Wendy's, the hamburger commercial, there was this white-haired lady who was famous for this saying, "Where's the beef?" And the deal was that she would go through and examine all the competitors' hamburgers, and she would measure them and weigh them, and she would say, "Oh, look, there's like this all bun, right? And then where's the beef?" And the point being that Wendy's burgers are better because there's more beef. So when we opened up Zoe's Burger King burger, I just had to say to myself, "Where's the beef?" And the fact that I had to explain all of that just makes me feel really old. Well, this fall, our sermon series is taking us through several of Jesus's parables about the kingdom of heaven, also known as the kingdom of God. And the reason why Jesus tells these parables is he's giving you these illustrative stories, these metaphors, right? And they're meant to tune our imaginations so that we understand a bit more about what the kingdom of heaven is like. And if you were here with us last week, then you would remember, what was the illustration? What was the metaphor that Jesus said, right? The kingdom of heaven is like treasure, right? The kingdom of heaven is like treasure. This amazing treasure that is worth more than you actually have. So you'd be joyful. You would joyfully sell all that you have to get that treasure. Of course, on the other end, Jesus also said that the kingdom of heaven is also like a merchant who treasures you. And he's already sold all that he has, his very life even, to get you. That is what the kingdom of heaven is like. It's good. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's worth all that we have. It's worth living for. All right. If that's the case, then let's hear more about this kingdom. Why? Why exactly is it worth all that we have? Why is it so good? This week, Jesus shows us something else about the kingdom. And his purpose in our parable today is to address the question, where's the beef? Don't fail me now, technology. Where's the beef? You see, Jesus, can you go back one, Tamara? Jesus has been going, by the time he's preaching this parable, Jesus has been going around from town to town, and he's been preaching the good news, and the summary statement of his preaching was basically, the kingdom is at hand. Repent and believe, right? The kingdom is at hand. It's right here. And whenever Jesus would go to a place, he would not only preach that, but he would heal sick people, and he would cleanse lepers, and he would help possessed people become freed, right? And he would say, these are signs that the kingdom is here. But still, there would be questions. Is that it, Jesus? I mean, yeah, that's great. We want people to be healed and the blind to see and lepers to be cleansed and paralyzed to be walked. But where's the kingdom, right? That's a hospital. We want the kingdom, We want the glory and the might and the power. Right? That's what we want. We want every knee to bow down to the one true God. That's a kingdom, right? And right now, we're not the kingdom because who's in charge? Rome is in charge. So where's the revolution? If the kingdom is coming, if it's at hand, where is the revolution where Jerusalem overshadows Rome? Jesus, where's the kingdom? The miracles are nice, like buns of a hamburger, but if you don't have the beef, it's not a burger. Where is the kingdom? And that is the question that Jesus is addressing today. But first, a quick note about how we're going to do our sermon this morning. As with last week, this week, we'll be taking a contemplative approach. In other words, my primary goal will not be to give you new insight, nor will my primary goal be to push some kind of application. Instead, my primary goal is that you would meet Jesus in the text. That's really what I want for you today. I want you to experience something of his truth and his beauty, his power, his love, as we listen to what he has to say about his kingdom and even himself. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? Insight is great. I hope you learn something new. Application is important. I hope you walk away with something, some way of living this out in your life. But how sad would it be if we learn things new about God and we decide to do things for God, but we actually never, if we don't get to know God better, right? If we don't get to meet him or experience something, some way of him in your life. So that's the goal of the contemplative approach. To help us do that, we're going to sing. At transition points throughout the sermon, we're going to sing verses through a song that relate to today's parable. And as I said last week, this may feel strange at first, but my hope is that as we keep singing these different verses throughout the sermon, we'll move past the strangeness and we'll get to a place where the singing actually helps to engage not just our minds, which is what I'm engaging you with right now as I'm talking, but as we sing, I'm hoping that it's going to engage our hearts. That's what music does. It engages our emotions. And I want us to do that so that as we contemplate the text, we meet Jesus. We meet Jesus in the text. So the contemplative approach. Our song today is He Worthy? Which is a song that I think many of you are familiar with. Maybe not by the title, but once you see it, you'll remember. So instead of practicing the song right now, we'll go ahead and get into the text. And then we'll sing the verses as we get to the transition points. All right, so that's the plan for this morning. Let's start with the text, and let's start with verses 31 and 32. There we go. Here's the parable. You just heard it read to you. What is the kingdom of heaven like? According to this parable, what is the kingdom of heaven like? Jesus says, a mustard seed. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. But why does Jesus compare it to a mustard seed? What makes it like the kingdom? Jesus tells you, because it is the smallest of seeds. Well, that is strange, isn't it? I mean, when you're going around trying to sell something, which, you know, if you want to be cynical, that's what Jesus is trying to do. You don't say, guys, I've got this thing. It's really small. It's really insignificant. You really want it. So why does Jesus say the kingdom is something so small? Well, look at what he says next in the text. When it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree. Jesus' point then is not how small the kingdom is, but that the kingdom goes through this radical growth, right? Goes through this radical growth. Now, that might just seem obvious to all of us if you've been in the church for a while. Oh, cool. You know, yeah, sure, the kingdom grows radically. Keep in mind that there are a lot of things that don't grow radically. Let me give you an example. Bunnies. Because why not? Bunnies. Baby bunnies are born smaller than baby cows, I assume. Right, David? Is that true? As a resident cow farmer. Okay. But even after both have grown up, guess what happens? Adult bunnies are still smaller than adult cows. They're smaller even than baby cows. Okay. In other words, bunnies do not undergo radical growth. They do not become bigger than cows. A lot of things are like that. Jesus' point is that the kingdom of heaven is not like a bunny, more like a mustard seed. You see, it is characterized by radical growth. I've even got a little diagram for us here. If Zoom will cooperate. Come on. There we go, radical growth. It starts out smallest. Can we go back a few? One more. There we go. Oh, come back. There we go. Starts out smallest, but one day it will become the largest, right? That's the point of radical growth. Starts out smallest, one day becomes the largest. So that's what we get from verses 31 and 32. Now let's talk about verse 33. What does Jesus say here? Well, here, Jesus changes metaphors. So if earlier he was talking about mustard seeds, here he is talking about something called leaven, which in our day and age is another word for starter dough. Raise your hand. Who here did the whole sourdough thing during the beginning of the pandemic? Right? It's okay. No shame here. Sourdough is delicious, right? You start with starter dough. And then you put it in a bunch of flour. You knead it together. And then you wait a certain amount of time. And at the end, the yeast has bubbled its way all the way through. The yeast has bubbled beyond just the starter dough all the way through into the rest of the flour. In Jesus' parable, the rest of the flour is an insane amount. I mean, it's an insane amount. Three measures of flour, which is what Jesus talks about here. Three measures of flour would have been about 10 5-pound bags of sugar. I mean, do you realize how long one bag of flour lasts in a typical household? 10 bags of flour would feed 100 people if you bake bread with it. But even with that much flour, Jesus says, you know what happens? You drop a little bit of leaven in it, you wait long enough, and that flour just bubbles. That leaven works itself all the way through. So here Jesus is changing metaphors from mustard seed to leaven, but his point remains the same, right? The kingdom of heaven. Come on, what's his point? The kingdom of heaven is characterized by radical growth. You guys were guessing that. That's what I was going to say, right? The kingdom of heaven is characterized by radical growth. And this picture of radical growth, the reason why he tells this parable, remember? It was to answer the question, where's the kingdom, right? And this is how he answers that question. Listen, the kingdom is at hand. Just like I've always said, the kingdom is at hand. Now I get it. It looks small right now, right? Just 12 disciples, maybe 70 other followers, maybe a few thousand fans, okay? And yeah, I've got some healings here and there. A few lepers are cleansed and a few people, possessed people were freed. But just you wait. Just you wait. Because let me tell you, when the kingdom is finally fully grown, right? Once the radical growth is complete, oh, you'll know. And you'll see. It'll be all that glory and power and might that you were imagining, except more. It'll be that great revolution you were hoping for, except not Jerusalem over Rome, but resurrection over death, grace over sin. All nations will bow down before the one true God, not because they have to or someone compelled them to, but because they want to, because they love him. Jesus acknowledges to his original audience that yes, right now the world is broken. Right now the shadows deepen. But do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through? And one day Jesus says, when the kingdom is fully grown and the leaven has done its work, all will be made new. That's what he's saying. Let's sing about that.
Do you feel the world is broken? We do. Do you feel the shadows deepen? We do. Do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through? We do. Do you wish that you could see it all made new? We do.
Let's do that one more time. Do you feel?
Do you feel the world is broken? Do you feel the shadows deepen? Do you know that all the dark won't stop the light from getting through? you wish that you could see it all made new.
So what now? This is what Jesus said 2,000 years ago. And it's been 2,000 years since he said, just you wait. It's been 2,000 years since he said, just you wait, right? And so maybe we might be asking, where's the kingdom now, Jesus? Surely, Jesus, in the past 2,000 years, that mustard seed should have grown, right? But why does it feel like the kingdom of heaven is still so far away? Okay, sure. There are a few answered prayers here and there, a few people healed, sure. Maybe a few manifestations of your mercy. But what is that, Jesus, compared to a pandemic and wildfires and hurricane after hurricane after hurricane that they've run out of names? Racial injustice that just keeps happening. Come on. Economic turmoil and our struggles with schooling, tribalism, political divisions, so that when one person dies, no one mourns. People aren't mourning. People are deciding who's going to replace her. And that's just in our country. Jesus, you said your kingdom would grow from something small into something really big. Well, it's been 2,000 years, Jesus. Where is the kingdom? Where's the kingdom? Well, maybe we should qualify the question a little bit, because it's worth pointing out that that Jesus' kingdom has grown, okay? Jesus' kingdom has grown because the church has grown, right? It did grow from just 12 disciples and a few thousand in Israel. It's worth the wait, guys. Here comes this next slide. Yeah, there we go. See? Few disciples. See that little picture on the ground to the whole world, okay? 12 disciples. A few thousand fans to now more than 2.4 billion followers of Christ all around the globe. And it's not just numbers, okay? Because of the church, the world now knows what we call higher education and modern healthcare, because it was the church that established the first universities as we know them now and the first hospitals. And while the church does get plenty of blame, rightfully so, for the stains of our history like the Crusades and witch hunts and endorsing segregation, it's not often recognized enough that the Christian faith is what led to the abolition of the slave trade. You should know that. And the Christian faith provided the underpinnings for constitutional democracy and universal human rights. Did you know that? So it's probably unfair to say that the kingdom of heaven is nowhere to be seen these days. Yes, there is a pandemic, and there are the struggles of schooling and the political division and the racial injustice, and they are significant problems. But imagine how much worse it would be if the church had never been around to establish hospitals or universities, or constitutional democracy to restrain the worst in our leaders, or to abolish the slave trade. Imagine. The kingdom is here. With that said, however, we should still validate the sentiment behind the question. Okay, fine, Jesus. I look at history, and sure, your kingdom has grown and has made a positive difference, but can't it grow more? Can't it grow faster? We have so many problems we can't seem to solve, and they only seem to be getting worse. To that, Jesus says, yes, and that's precisely why I've given you my parable, this parable, so that you could have hope. My kingdom will one day become so large that, like the largest tree in a garden, it will overshadow all that you fear. I want you to know that. That's why I'm telling you this parable. But, Jesus continues, do not pin your ultimate hope on the size of the church or the impact of Christianity. Because size can shrink. The church can shrink. And impact can be mixed. We've already seen that. The impact of the church is mixed. And everything, all that can change. And nowhere, by the way, in my parable, or even in all the scriptures, do I promise that history is just going to be one upward slope for things getting better and better. That's not proof of the kingdom. In fact, I've warned you that things will actually get worse. So don't pin your hopes on church growth or Christian impact. Instead, pin your hope on me, Jesus says. Come, let's meditate on this parable again. Where do you see Jesus in this parable? Who is Jesus in this parable? I think that Jesus is the seed. He is a seed buried in the ground. Remember? Remember how Jesus was condemned and crucified as a criminal? How he was meant to be forgotten in the histories? How he was meant to be made small compared to who else was in charge? How he was meant to be buried and hidden away in a grave? But then what happened? Do you guys remember? Radical growth. Radical growth is what happened. And in just 3 days, right? Jesus went from a dead man buried in the ground to a risen man who will never die. He went from a criminal condemned by an earthly court to the Son of God declared in power through resurrection from the dead. He went from a Palestinian Jew known only to a few to now being highly exalted. And one day every knee shall bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of his Father. Here is my point. If you want proof of the radical growth of the kingdom, that something so small can become so great, or something so wrong can be made so right, then look no further than Jesus' death and resurrection. That's where we look, ultimately. Not to church growth or Christian impact, but to the gospel. Jesus' death and resurrection. Which, by the way, because it's safe in history, it's already happened, it will never change. You don't have to worry about change of impact or change of size. He is now and forever will be risen in glory with the power and the promise to defeat every enemy, whether that enemy be sickness or sin or injustice or racism or division or dysfunction or even death itself. Jesus has the power and promise to defeat all of our enemies. And one day Jesus will return. He will return to exercise that power and to keep that promise to defeat every enemy. That's why Jesus gave us this parable. To remember that. So pin your hope on him. His new creation will come. And then his glory will be the light in our midst. It's good for us to remember that. Let's sing about it.
Is all creation groaning? Is a new creation coming? Is the glory of the Lord to be the light within our midst? Is it good that we remind ourselves of?
Sing that one more time. It's all creation groaning.
It's all creation groaning. It's a new creation coming. Is the glory of the Lord to be the light within our midst? Is it good that we remind ourselves of it?
It is.
So we just talked about the big macro question. All these problems in our world still, Jesus, so where is your kingdom? But perhaps now it'd be good for us to reflect a bit more personally. All these problems in my life, Jesus. All these problems in my heart, Jesus. So where is your kingdom? Aren't you supposed to be the healer of sin, Jesus? Aren't you supposed to be the conqueror against temptation, Jesus? Don't you promise, Jesus, to give my life, imbue my life with a sense of greater purpose? Don't you promise, Jesus, to help me feel like my life has meaning and impact? But sometimes I don't see it. Sometimes I don't see it enough. So where's your kingdom, Jesus? Not just out there in the world, but where's your kingdom right here in my life, in my heart? And I want to validate the sentiment behind this question. Because even though the fact that just asking that question is evidence that Jesus' kingdom is in our lives, right? Because if he weren't, why would we be asking him? We can still ask that question. We can still want more of Jesus' kingdom, right? It's not wrong to long for Jesus to make us more like his kingdom people. It's not wrong to wonder when he's going to make us better people, that better person in Christ. It's not wrong to wonder, when am I going to have that deeper sense of significance? When am I going to have that sense that what I'm doing makes a difference? And to this, I think Jesus says, yes. And that is precisely why I gave you this parable. I gave it to you so you could have hope for these things. Come, meditate with me again on this parable. Where do you see Jesus? Who is Jesus in this parable? I think in this case, Jesus is the leaven. Jesus is the leaven in this parable. Jesus is the leaven hid in the flour. Because remember how Jesus said that he would send you his spirit. And how right now, listen, if you believe in Jesus, then he says you actually have his spirit hidden inside of you. And he who began a good work in you, what's going to happen? He's going to bring it to completion, right? Just like leaven will inevitably work itself through, bubble its way through even the largest amount of dough, Jesus says, so my spirit will work himself through you and through the entirety of your life, just as inevitably. You are, friends, you are being renewed. You are being transformed more and more into the likeness of Jesus from glory to glory. He wants you to know that that is what's going to happen. It's his promise, like leaven working through the dough. His spirit is at work in your life. Okay, Jason, that might be the case, but what am I supposed to be looking for? What is leaven working itself through my life? You know, it's a metaphor, okay? What does that look like in my life? What does it look like for the spirit to be working through my life? What is evidence that the spirit of Jesus' kingdom is in fact leavening us? Well, what does our text today say about what the kingdom is like? What does the dough look like? Well, there are a few things. The first we've already talked about. The kingdom is sown small. Yeah, there we go. The kingdom is sown small, right? Just like a little seed or just like a little lump of leaven. It's up there in the top corner right there. But the second thing that we haven't yet talked about has to do with this picture in verse 32. That's a bird and a mustard seed, a mustard plant, nesting in the branches of a full-grown mustard tree. Now, anyone in Jesus' original audience, when Jesus referenced that, would have immediately thought of Daniel chapter 4 or Ezekiel chapter 31, where the prophets envision this great earthly kingdom growing like this huge expansive tree with the branches that extend so broadly that the birds of the air can make their nests in the boughs. Okay, that's what you see in Ezekiel 31 and Daniel 4. The point, of course, is that the growth of Jesus' kingdom is not for its own sake, but so that others can have a home, so that others can be cared for in love. So that's second. And then third, in Jesus' leaven parable, the large quantity of flour in verse 33 alludes to several important Old Testament stories. These are the stories of Abraham and Gideon and Hannah, who have each taken an insane amount of flour and used it to prepare a feast. And if you remember, who are these feasts for? These feasts were for angels who came to represent God, who made bold promises to them. The point is that this large amount of flour has deep spiritual significance. The growth of Jesus' kingdom is not just for its own sake, but so that the people of God might show their love for him in response to his love for them. So you take these three together, okay? And what we get is this. To live for the kingdom, to have the spirit of the kingdom manifest himself in your life, is not to be found in how big what you did was. It's not to be found in doing something big, because the kingdom is sown small. Instead, to live for the kingdom is to be focused on loving others and loving God, to provide a place for the birds, to provide a feast for the Lord. In other words, as Mother Teresa is often quoted to have said, we can do no great things. When it comes to what God cares about, we can do no great things. What is our greatest thing compared to what God can do? We can do no great things. We can only do small things with great love. We can only do small things with great love. Now, don't get me wrong here. Small things, that's not a downplay. That's not a, oh, whatever you do small is fine. No. It's really hard to do small things with great love. We do a lot of small things. We don't do a lot of small things with great love. But if you want to know whether the spirit of Jesus' kingdom is, in fact, leavening your life, then do not look to the great things you might have accomplished that the world looks at. Instead, look to the small things that God looks at that you've done out of love for neighbor and love for God. Now, I am tempted to get more specific about this. For example, what might it look like in our own lives to do small things with great love? I'm tempted to say, maybe it looks like seeing that person on the street with great love. They need far more than you and I could offer, but Jesus' kingdom is on display when you offer what you can with great love. Or perhaps it's giving to ministries that care for those in need with great love. They could use far more than you or I could give, you or I could give. But the kingdom is on display when you give what you can with great love. Or maybe it's investing in someone younger than you with great love. Meeting with a mentor in the faith every once in a while is not all that people need for spiritual growth. It's a small thing, but the kingdom is on display when you invest as much as you can with great love. When you do meet with them, you're really present. Or perhaps it's reaching out to that person different from you with great love. The problems of polarization and division in our society are deeper than one conversation can solve, but Jesus' kingdom is on display when you listen with care, with great love. And who knows what God will do with our small offerings. On the topic of listening, a recent president said this: "I learned that if you listen hard enough, everyone has a sacred story, and they're willing to share it with you if they feel like you care." And what ends up being, and that ends up being the glue, that connection ends up being the glue around which relationships are formed, trust is formed, and communities are formed. And ultimately, says this president, that is the glue that makes democracies work. That is the glue that makes democracies work. Do you hear that? Listening. That's the prescription. It's so small, like a little mustard seed, like leaven, right? Something any of us could do every day, whether or not we actually do it. But if done with great love, it becomes the glue that holds relationships together, that holds communities together, that could even hold an entire nation together. Small things done with great love become kingdom things. And it's not just with other people, it's also with God, right? None of us can just jump into this amazing, vibrant prayer life. It begins with small steps of choosing to pray tomorrow and then choosing to pray again the next day and then the next day. That is how we grow in the journey of a vibrant prayer life. And the same can be said for any of our spiritual disciplines, whether that's studying the scriptures or fasting or being in community with other believers. Small things done with great love become kingdom things. So like I said, I'm tempted to get specific, just like I did. But far better than for me to keep talking about it with you would be for you to talk about it with God. So let me leave you with this. Ask God, what is something small that I can now resolve to do with great love? Because if you want to know that the spirit of Jesus' kingdom is in fact leavening your life, then it means having more of that in your life, right? More of small things done with great love. Love for God and love for neighbor. So that's the question. What is something small that I can now resolve to do with great love? So we're going to sing the song one more time. And as we sing it, let's ask God that question. And I mean that. As we sing it, I mean that. Pray. Ask God, what is something that I can do? What's a small thing that I can do with great love? Ask God to lead you in that. And then we'll have a moment after we sing to sit in silent reflection. Let's sing. Does the Father truly love us?
He does.
Does the Spirit move among us?
He does.
Does Jesus our Messiah hold forever those he loves?
He does.
Does our God intend to dwell again with us?
He does.
Father truly love us?
Does the Father truly love us?
He does.
Fear and move among us.
He does.
Does Jesus our Messiah hold forever those he loves?
He does.
Does our God intend to dwell again with us?
He does.
Here at this table, remember how Jesus' body was broken like bread, and how his blood was poured out like wine on the cross. We remember how Jesus was falsely condemned as a criminal, and was crucified and then buried, all because his enemies wanted him to be forgotten, hidden, and made small. But also at this table, we celebrate how the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, because that which is buried in the ground as the smallest of all actually grows up to become the largest of all. So that we today, even centuries later, even halfway around the world, coming from so many different ethnicities and backgrounds, the fact that we're here today coming to this table, we are evidence of the radical growth of the kingdom. For they meant to make Jesus small and forgotten, but here we are, not only remembering him, but even worshiping him and communing with him, who is now our risen and exalted King. And so if you're someone who trusts in this King, if you've joined him and his church through baptism and a profession of faith, we invite you to come to this table, eat this bread, drink this wine, remember and celebrate the kind of King we have, who was once sown small, but is now risen in glory. And his kingdom has become for us an expansive tree with branches so broad that even we, us here, can find in him an eternal home. If, however, trusting Jesus and baptism in his church are things you're not quite ready for yet, we're glad you're here. This table is also for you, but first things first, instead of coming today, bring your questions to God in prayer, and then after the service is over, come and talk to one of the leaders of this church. We'd love to have